This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org.
TGIF.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. This has been one tough week for the financial markets, and it's not ending well. Stock markets in Asia all finished at least 2% lower. Shares in China and India fell more than 4% today. In Japan, the Nikkei will have its worst half-year performance since 1995. Then there's the price of oil. It hit almost $142 a barrel this morning. All of this follows a dismal day on Wall Street yesterday. The Dow dropped 360 points to 11,577. It hasn't been this low since the fall of 2006. All three major indexes dropped at least 3%. The NASDAQ had its worst day since January, falling 79 points. The S&P 500 lost 38. In Europe, shares are down more than a percent so far. Let's bring in our European correspondent, Stephen Beard. Stephen, what is the mood there in Europe?
Pretty gloomy, pretty depressed. It coincides with the publication of a research note from Barclays Capital. And this one takes a real swipe at the Fed. It says the credibility of the Fed has fallen below zero. It's allowed the inflation genie out of the bottle.
Wow, that's pretty severe. Anything else in there?
Well, it warns Barclays clients to prepare for a financial storm ahead. It suggests that headline inflation in the U.S. is going to hit 5.5% by August, and that the Fed will be forced to raise interest rates six times by the end of next year to prevent a wage spiral. It's pretty depressing stuff, suggesting that investors should put on their hard hats and prepare for a lot of trouble.
Speaking of depressing, Stephen, the head of Gazprom is making a prediction, another prediction, that oil is going to 250 next year. What do you make of that?
Well, not, I suppose, entirely unexpected that the head of an energy company would be bullish about his principal product. But indeed, Alexei Miller, in an interview in the Financial Times this morning, says the world is undergoing a great surge in oil and gas prices, which will end with prices at a radically new level.
Well, good morning to you, sir.
Isn't it great to be alive?
All right, Stephen Beard in London, thanks.
Okay, Scott.
Visa is going to give gas station owners a break. It'll reduce the fees charged when people swipe their credit cards at the pump. Those fees are a fixed percentage of each transaction, so they've been going up with the price of gasoline. Fees are now about 10 cents a gallon, which is almost the entire markup stations charge you per gallon. I don't imagine this will bring down the price of gasoline much, so let's move on. To chocolate. The world's cocoa supply is under threat. But there's no need to hoard the Hershey's just yet. Government scientists and the candy industry are on it. Janet Babin reports from our innovations desk at North Carolina Public Radio.
It's more than inflation that's up the cost of those M&Ms. The cacao tree, that's the tree that produces cocoa beans, is under siege from drought and disease. The lost crops cost farmers about $700 million a year. Short supply has doubled bean prices in many places. To improve crop yields, scientists will map the cocoa bean genome. Raymond Schnell is a geneticist with the USDA's Ag Research Service.
What we're trying to do is produce more disease-resistant varieties of cacao that are highly productive and have the flavor attributes that are needed by the confectionery industry.
Most cocoa beans are grown outside the U.S. So why does the U.S. government research them? Schnell says it's because 65,000 people here work in the candy industry. American candy giant Mars, Inc. will contribute $10 million to fund the research. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by the Medtronic Foundation, working to reduce heart disease, the number one killer of American women, by supporting Women Heart. Information at womenheart.org. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the foundation of entrepreneurship. Online at kauffman.org.
churches usually don't have to pay property taxes. The IRS considers a house of worship a nonprofit cause. But some congregations don't meet in church buildings these days. So guess what? The IRS is re-examining this. Ashley Milne-Tite explains.
My name is Beth, and it's a privilege to welcome you to Christ Chapel this evening.
Beth White is associate pastor of Christ Chapel, a church in Macon, Georgia. Each Sunday, around 800 people pack an auditorium in the sprawling sports center the church calls home.
More and more churches are seeing more results, more payout for their investment by using spaces that can be used to reach students and families and adults all throughout the week.
White says the church moved in here in part because of the local arena minor league football team, figuring being close to the team would give the church a shot at attracting more kids to the fold. The church let the team keep an office in the building. The team let the church do a little marketing at home games. The congregation grew. But so did interest from the local tax board.
The whole complication was the fact that the football team was using our building, and they were a for-profit business.
Christ Chapel got a property tax bill for $17,000. That eventually dropped to $3,600. But some so-called megachurches have been hit with bills of more than $100,000. The Reverend Jerry Kucher is chief of finance and operations for the Episcopal Diocese of New York. He says some of these churches meet in former malls and rent the remaining space to stores, restaurants, and gyms.
You might say, of course, the body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, as St. Paul saith, but it's not immediately obvious that running a gym is part of the church's exempt purpose.
If a church runs a commercial business, Kucher says, or leases its space to one, it has to act like one.
You're involved in a private sector activity, so you should be paying property taxes like commercial landlords do.
Beth White of Christ Chapel says more churches are likely to wrestle with property tax issues for one reason.
There's more and more vacant commercial real estate out there.
America's growing churches are taking advantage of the situation and buying the space up, and that's turning many of them into landlords. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Enjoy your weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.